Thank you, Kenny. Thank you all. Just let me get a Y to make sure y'all can hear me. Okay. Everything sounds are good. Yay. Okay, my name is John, and I am a grateful recovering nicotine fiend. And I'm so glad to have a little bit of time. You know, 90 days is, you know, both an incredibly substantial amount of time away from a cigarette, and also no time at all, right? So I'm very aware of that paradox, and I am grateful also to not be obsessed with nicotine today. I did have, it's funny listening to Kenny talk, I did have some feelings of some urges, you know, like just like the general missing of what it's like to actually draw smoke into the body. There's a very interesting, it's a very interesting sensation to pull smoke in, either in a cigar or in a cigarette. And every once in a while I'll get that craving, but I won't, but it doesn't stay. It doesn't stay. Thank God. I have 95 days to be exact, nicotine free. And I have been coming to Bonner for about 4 years. So for those of you who are new or struggling or still smoking, I'm here to tell you that don't give up. Don't give up, because it's one of those things that, you know, it's very it's very mysterious and miraculous, the actual coming together of everything that allows a quit to happen. That's what I found. If it was just my willpower, I would have done it years ago. If it was just my willpower, I would have stayed nicotine free. I had 7 years nicotine free and nicotine anonymous prior. So it's not, there's a lot that has to come together. You know, some combination of willingness and, God's grace and opportunity to be of service and, you know, free time and just, you know, commitment and all of those things, have to come together for a quit to actually happen, especially if you're going cold turkey. You know, I've had a lot easier times. I'll kind of give a little bit of my history, because I don't think I've done that in this group, but I'll give you a little bit of the story of what it was like, what happened, and what's like now. Unlike a lot of people, I didn't start smoking till I was in my mid 20s, probably 25. And I remember being in France, traveling with my father. I was still drinking at the time, so we were drunk at some bar, some French bar in Paris. And everybody smoked. This was in, you know, the 90s and, you know, early 90s. And I remember, you know, finally, after years of being like, I'll never smoke, I hate cigarettes, blah, 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 I'll never smoke, being, you know, okay, I'll try it. Right. And of course I tried it, and it made me dizzy, but I kept going with it as best I could. And, you know, everybody in Paris seemed to be smoking at the time, and it just seemed like a good idea. And, you know, it took me so the last few years of my drinking, I smoked, especially when I did drugs. I didn't quite get the, you know, the smoking bug, maybe two or three, I don't know. I didn't really start smoking until I got sober, in 1995. And then it became kind of a thing. Like, all of a sudden it took hold in my life. And I remember I was maybe 2 or 3 months sober, and I tried to quit smoking one day, and I was crazy. Like, I called my sponsor in AA, you know, 3 in the afternoon, and I hadn't smoked all day that day. And I remember like being like, I'm crazy. I want to kill people. I want to drink. And he's like, no. Forget about quitting smoking. If you're quitting drinking, let that be enough. And I went with that for a long time. I went with that for at least 5 or 6 years of, all right, never mind smoking. I'll just smoke. I'll do the best I can to, you know, mitigate it, or I'll try to stop it. But you know, it really took hold when I got sober. And you know, I got sober in LA, and again, everybody smoked in LA. In the 90s, mid 90s, there's just a ton of smoking going on. You could still smoke in bars, some bars at least. And so and most AA meetings had massive either smoke breaks or, you know, smoking before and after the meeting. So there was just a ton of smoking in AA. I know other guys have talked about, Jeff talked about it. Jeff from Joshua Tree talked about it, but AA and smoking went hand in hand. It still does in many parts of the country. And I realized I just wasn't ready. And then my daughter was born when I was 2 years sober. And, you know, I smoked through that. You know, I would always smoke outside, and I would use all the justifications of like never smoking around her and never smoking inside and da da da. But, you know, I smoked for the first 6-7 years of my daughter's life, and she had a chronic lung illness. She actually died of that a couple years back. And I don't know if I've ever really come to grips with that yet. I don't think I've ever come to grips with just the tremendous guilt and shame about, you know, my daughter being in the hospital, me going downstairs smoking, coming back in the hospital. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there was smoke on my clothes. I'm sure my smoking did not help her lungs. I'm sure of it. Both her mom and I smoked, and we were living in New York at the time. I was in grad school at New York, and in New York, we'd go outside and smoke on the you know, fire escape. And man, you know, I don't know if I've ever really, I'm not at the ninth step yet, and I haven't made amends for that. I'm not sure how I would, given that my daughter's dead. But I'm sure there are ways to do it. But no, I haven't really come to grips with that yet. But I don't know, maybe around 5-6 years sober, I started to get the bug that I should quit. I was in my mid to late 30s, and I knew that it was going to happen. And so I remember trying a few times to quit, and I got, you know, I'd get a couple weeks, maybe one time on the patch, and then I'd get some time. I'd get a few weeks, a few months. I almost got a year. I got a year, almost a year once. And then smoked. So I had little bursts of quits, but I really didn't get my first quit till I was about 40. And my first really good quit, like years, till I was 42. And at the time, there was a meeting in Los Angeles. It was like the original Nicotine Anonymous meeting. And it's a big meeting, like 50 to 100 people every Monday night. It's now much smaller, like 20 to 30 people. But there was always, you know, tons of people at this meeting. Jack Rosenbaum and Barry, my sponsor, and Carrie White, and a bunch of people who were kind of like some of the OGs, and at least in Los Angeles, Nicotine Anonymous Recovery, were part of that meeting. And I went there, and I got it. I finally, after multiple tries, I finally got it quit together, and ended up, you know, getting. You know, getting a commitment there. I'd go every Monday. There was a couple in-person meetings, and I really got a nice little rhythm going. And I got, you know, a number of years. I got, you know, about 4 or 5 years before I stopped going to meetings. So around 4 or 5 years, I stopped going to meetings. The in-person meetings kind of dwindled away, and there were less of them, and I just kind of drifted away, and I didn't talk to my sponsor. And I made it another 2 or 3 years. Not smoking, you know, just kind of riding on the coattails of what I had done previously. Although I never worked the steps in Nicotine Anonymous. I mean, I guess I worked the first 3 or 4 steps, but never really did an inventory, never really did that. So I didn't work the steps, and I didn't, you know, stay connected to the program. And so eventually I drift away. And I remember I was at my friend's house, two guys that I got sober with. And, you know, they were all just hanging out, and they pulled out a couple cigars. They smoked cigars. And 7 years sober, I smoked on a cigar. And and immediately felt nauseous and was like, oh shit, why did I do that? It was really, you know, just a total, total regret. And I remember, like, you know, saying to myself, no, you can't let this turn into you smoking again. And it was a number of weeks, I think. And then I can't remember, one night, just out of nowhere, the urge came back, just out of nowhere. And I found myself smoking a cigarette. And then I don't think I smoked again for another few more weeks. So it kind of came in a really weird way where it would come, you know, I went weeks in between smoking. And then I remember going to Europe and being in a very stressful sort of work situation. It didn't go very well. And I was taking a little break and I drove to Switzerland. I was like doing work in Amsterdam and then in Switzerland. And I drove to Switzerland and was by myself for a few days. And I picked up, I bought my first pack of cigarettes in like 8 years and smoked a few and then parked. You know, I remember parking because you had to park in this place I was at. It was called the Interlaken, which is a beautiful mountain region in Switzerland. You park your car and then you take a tram up to the town where you stay for a few days, and there's no cars allowed in the mountains. So I left my cigarettes out for a few days. I went and I enjoyed the Swiss Alps. It was really beautiful. Came back down. There were the cigarettes there waiting for me. And I was kind of off to the races at that point. So it took a while for the relapse to take hold. But once it did, man, I quit. I quit for a few weeks, a few months. I remember one time in this quit, I had 3 months. I had 3 months sober, kind of cold turkey. I wasn't doing it in the program. It was early on. And it must have been about five, six years ago. And I actually got into a fight. Like the first time in, I don't know how long, like a fist fight, like somebody like came at me and I pushed him away and then he came at me again and I punched him twice. And it was the strangest feeling to be 20 some odd years, to be 20 years sober and to get into a fist fight. It was very disturbing. And that night I went and bought a pack of cigarettes and relapsed after having about 3 months. And so, this whole journey of being sober, but not being able to, like, just watching my, you know, my emotional and my, you know, sobriety from cigarettes, from nicotine disappear over the course of time. It didn't happen all at once. It took a couple years for things to really get bad. But by the time I made it to Vonner, I was so addicted again. And about 4 years ago, I was so addicted again. And I kept coming to these meetings and I'd get a few days and a couple weeks and 10 days. And I could not get sober from nicotine. I could not get free. And I kept coming. I mean, those of you who've seen me here, I've seen most of you guys come in with the exception of like Kenny and Lulu and all, you know, people who were here before I got here, but so many people I actually saw come in and get sober. And I was just kind of, you know, watching everybody get sober while I would just keep relapsing and then, you know, come back to meetings and go, oh, I relapsed, smoked last night. And just the, what started to build over the course of a few months, if not really over a couple of years, was the level of self-hatred. And what had been a pretty dormant self-loathing, you know, piece of me that was filled with self-loathing, it got activated again. Like, you know, I was many years sober. I was a good father. I was a good member of society. I just had this secret, like this secret thing that I hid from most everybody, that I hid from almost everybody. Nobody really knew I smoked. And the way that the self-hatred just kind of took hold, especially over the last couple of years, got incredibly painful. To the point where, you know, I teach, I literally teach you know, intimacy and meditation and kind of a personal, like, you know, sort of personal health and wellness practice. And I would be at workshops, I'd be leading workshops, and I would sneak off on the breaks. I would sneak off on the breaks, smoke one cigarette, literally, if I was go to Equinox Gym, steam, shower, you know, mouthwash like hell, come back, teach again for another couple, 3 hours, go off on the break. I would change, I mean, I changed my shirt 4 or 5 times a day. So I literally had to live this lie of being a teacher, a meditation teacher, and an intimacy teacher by day, and like having this incredibly destructive lie that I lived, and I hid it from people. And it was such self-demeaning behavior. I felt so crappy. I felt like such a hypocrite. I felt so trapped. And I think, you know, I felt this way the entire time. And like Kenny was saying, you know, the one thing that kept me coming back was that everybody was really sweet to me coming back, you know, I mean, literally every other day or every other week, you know, multiple times, buying 3 or 4 packs a day, smoking 2 cigarettes, throwing them away. I mean, I've talked about that, but the thing that kept me coming back was this belief, like, man, I would be really screwed if I wasn't part of this program and I just let myself smoke again. I would be screwed. I was pushing 50 now. And even though I was in pretty good shape and I'm still pretty healthy, you know, I know what that means. You know, being smoking in your 50s is not good news. And it's not, you know, there's no way to justify it. And I was kind of having all this success in my regular life. So I it's like I got everything that I wanted in my regular life, professionally at least, and yet I had this secret that was killing me. So I just kept coming back, and the only thing I could hang my hat on was that I would get a few days here and a couple weeks there and 10 days here. And that is, you know what I mean? I must have asked 20 different people to sponsor me in this program alone, in this group alone. And I would smoke and then I would stop calling them. But I knew that I was getting some free time from cigarettes, and I knew that meant something. And even if I smoked half the time, I knew, like, okay, well, instead of I've relapsed for 5 years, instead of smoking for 5 straight years, I've smoked half of that. So I was cutting my nicotine use in half, even though I felt like crap the whole time. And it became, you know, I remember this, I remember a couple of years ago when I was in New York and I was teaching a workshop, and I was doing the thing that I was just telling you about, like running off, smoking, hiding, praying to God, like nobody in my workshop came around the corner and saw me smoking, you know, showering, coming back to the workshop, hoping to God nobody smelled me. And I got the call that my daughter, who'd been waiting for a lung transplant, was going in to get a lung transplant. So I flew home that night, and, you know, was on the way down to the hospital where she had got, I couldn't make it back in time. She got the lung transplant, because, you know, you have to go right in. She got the lung transplant and it went great. But then, the next day she threw a blood clot and stroked out. She was 21 years old. She had a brand new pair of lungs and she had a stroke. And that week we were in the hospital. They literally cut out, you know, they cut open her skull to give room for her brain to swell. And we would just sat there and watched as she fought for her life, but lost, ultimately lost. And I remember, that was September 2018. And, you know, most of the people in this group kind of saw me go through that. And I was trying. I kept trying to quit. You know, even 2 days after she died, I was trying to quit. You know, and I just couldn't. And I just couldn't. And so the last couple of years, up until March 17th, which I guess is St. Patty's Day, was also like one of the first days we went into quarantine. I finally called somebody. I remember calling somebody who I heard on the phone meeting, and I said, man, I just don't know how to actually make it stick anymore. I can't figure out how to do it. And he suggested, he said, listen, I did two things. I made a commitment to somebody to call them before I smoked. And I just made that commitment, even if I was going to smoke, which I'd done before, but for some reason it just never landed. And I started to try to share meetings like right away on the free bridge, on the phone meetings, the free bridge. And so it just so happened that there was a marathon 3 days in to my quit on Vonner. And I like chased Dorothy and said, Dorothy, let me co-chair with you. And then I chased somebody around on the free bridge and the phone meetings. And I said, let me co-chair with you with 5 days. And so literally 3 days in, 5 days in, I started co-chairing meetings, and just kind of miraculously, the urge disappeared for me, like almost immediately. I had a couple urges. I think I had to call this woman who I agreed to call, and I called my sponsor like once or twice before. I was ashamed to call my sponsor because by that time I'd relapsed so many times. I just felt like I can't even call my sponsor anymore. So I picked somebody else but I remember like a week in, 2 weeks in, just going, chairing with Catherine is her name on the free bridge every Wednesday. And it just kept me, and I get to a meeting every day, and I'd get to a meeting. I'd try to get there right at the start of the meeting. I would jump on something to read. I would just like, I'm going to read something. I'm going to keep the topics. I'm going to, you know, read the traditions. I'm going to read the promises. I'm going to do some. I need to be of service. Like my life depends on it, because it did. And finally, the urge got removed. And then when I had 30 days, and it was kind of miraculous because the urge did not get removed in all of my other quits, my 10-day quits. I mean, I had a dozen or so 10-day quits or 2-week quits in the last year. And it was like nails on a freaking chalkboard. But the moment I stepped in and said, I'm just going to like find a meeting, chair every meeting I can, be of service in whatever way I can at every meeting, it was just like, that was the key for me. And when I got 30 days, I basically just chased Amy around and co-chaired every meeting she would let me. And I did that for a few weeks, once or twice a week. I think I was a couple meetings a week I would co-chair with her. And all of a sudden the time just kind of started to add up, and I had 30 days and then I had 60 days and then I got my hat. There's a little, and I had to work a little, you know, kind of hard to get my hat, but I got my hat. And then I was like, I wanted to chair a meeting, but there were like no like decent time slots for meetings. Like all the meeting slots were filled except for like the 5 a.m. on the West Coast Monday and Tuesday morning. So I was like, all right, screw it. Monday, you know, if this is the penance I pay, if this is like the going to any lengths piece, I'm going to get up at 4 a.m. on Monday so that I can get some coffee and get coherent and then chair a meeting at 5 a.m. That's what I got to do. And so that's what I've been doing for the last few weeks. I completely spaced last week. I worked all weekend and I just totally forgot. And I woke up in a panic and I was like, oh shit, I forgot the meeting. And I was immediately like thinking like, oh no, I can't smoke. This can't be the thing that makes me smoke. But luckily it did not. And I even contacted Kenny. I'm like, Kenny, I'll speak, because I'm desperate. I am desperate to find things to do that put me in the grace of a power greater than myself that removes the urge to smoke. Because this thing is so, for me, this thing has been so, it rooted itself in my heart and in my nervous system so deeply that I needed a miraculous psychic surgery to remove it. And for me, that was really about, you know, being of service as best I could. Of course, there's always more to do and I can always be more active. But I think given my, you know, my schedule, I've really made every effort to be of service as much as I can. Every time I got some time nicotine free, these feelings about my daughter would come up. They've definitely been up over the last couple of months. But I feel them, you know, I feel them. I miss her so much. She's such a beautiful person and I miss her so much, but I'm not the same person. I'm not the same person I was. I'm a completely different. What's completely different is my capacity to be in the moment with others or with the moment fully. Whereas when I was smoking, I had two modes, obsessing about nicotine or obsessing about quitting nicotine. Those were the only two ways of being. I worked and I, you know, kind of somehow fit other things in my world, but I basically, that was it. I was either obsessing about when am I going to quit or I was obsessing about when am I going to smoke. And it's so nice to not have to have like a full possibility of life, even though it's still very early and I'm still very, you know, new in all of this. But I'm just so grateful. And I'm so grateful for the people in this group, Kenny, very grateful for you. Very grateful for all the people that came before me. You know, Leslie heard me. You know, a lot of people heard me on this meeting for years. Years. You were all so patient. I must have been, you know, I don't know. I'm sure you guys didn't care. But for me, I was like, oh, God, they must be tired of hearing my story. But anyway, I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak, Kenny. I hope this was helpful for somebody. And that's it for me. I'll go ahead and turn it back to you, Ken. Thank you.